This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This week on Huckabee, rock legend Chuck Lavengel, author Tim Carney. We're in the kitchen with Judith McLaughlin, plus the magic of Scott Green. That's Trey Corley at the Music City Connection. And I'm your announcer, Keith Bilbrey. And now, here's Huckabee! Welcome, everyone. We are so very happy. I don't know if you know this or not, but it is St. Patrick's Day weekend. And in our audience, most of our folks are here, and they're dressed up as leprechauns and Irish people. We've got our resident Irish chef who's going to be cooking up some Irish food for us tonight. It's going to be fun, and I'm wearing my Irish tie just because I can. That's simple as that. You know, President Obama once said something that I totally agree with. He said, yes, he did. He said, elections have consequences. They sure do. Yeah, they do. And perhaps you didn't like Donald Trump's tweets or some of his comments, although I would venture to say that some things that were attributed to him by the very biased and reckless media weren't at all what he actually said. But let's just review some consequences of the 2020 election. Now, maybe you're fine with the open borders the Biden administration created by having 94 separate executive orders that stopped the construction of the border wall, ended the stay in Mexico policy that forced those who wanted asylum to apply in the country of origin rather than being allowed to come into the United States and then get a hearing set, usually years away. Under President Biden, we stopped most of the deportation, even of people who committed violent crimes against American citizens. And we didn't require any documentation of who the people were coming into the country, why they came, where they were going, or even if they had a disease. While U.S. citizens were still being forced to wear masks, get vaccinated, or quarantine if tested positive for COVID, illegal aliens were excused from any of those requirements. Another consequence was that George Soros-financed left-wing prosecutors who implemented the no-bail policy, allowing even violent criminals to get released from jail before the victims of the crime got out of the hospital from being treated from the criminals' attacks. That was crazy. But even if you didn't have a family member die from the fentanyl poisoning brought across the border, or maybe you weren't the victim of a violent crime at the hands of an illegal who shouldn't even be here, you certainly have been impacted by the consequences of the 2020 election. According to Republican members of the U.S. Senate Joint Economic Committee, the typical American family is paying $11,434 more for the same exact standard of living that you had when Joe Biden took office. He claimed he had stopped inflation. He simply has not. In fact, a median-priced home is up 80 to 100% during his 3 years. Gasoline for your car, it's up 60% and probably will get higher. Food costs are up 21%, electricity 28%, rent is up 20%, and the price of eating out is up 21% on average. Airfare, 31% higher. Natural gas, 30% higher, and baby formula, you know, what Trey has at least three times a day, it's up 30%. Now, these are real costs to you. And Joe Biden says the reason that food makers are putting fewer chips in the package, that's why inflation is there, and that a Snickers bar is smaller than it used to be. That's simply not true. The reason that costs have skyrocketed have to do with the consequences of the last election. This administration has stepped up regulations on businesses, regulations that, like it or not, Donald Trump slashed. You see, here's how it works. When a business has to spend more time answering government bureaucrats about how diverse it is or what it's doing for climate change, that costs money. And you know what happens? That cost gets passed on to you. Joe Biden declared war on fossil fuels. That means we went from being energy independent during the Trump years, first time in 75 years, to again begging Middle East and South American adversaries for oil. And it's not just costing you more at the pump. It costs more for the farmer to run his tractor, and then for the truck to take his crops to the processor, and then for more trucks to get the finished products to the store. And oh, by the way, it costs the store more money to keep the lights going. And because Democrat prosecutors stopped prosecuting people who are robbing and shoplifting the stores, all those losses get passed on to you, the paying customer. And the cost of crime going up means your insurance costs more. And that's where some of that extra $11,434 that the typical American family is paying, that's where it's going. Now, unless you just aren't bothered by losing $11,434 a year in your pocket, you might want to think very carefully about who you'll vote for. So, let this be a surprise. I pay tribute to President Barack Obama for a very accurate observation. Elections have consequences, and the one this year will have some serious consequences. Even if you're fine with the current president using the government police agencies, going after his opponent in the most blatant form of election interference, I cannot imagine that you feel good about what is happening to your own family and simply putting food on your table, gas in your car, and clothes on your back. As you think about the election this year, just remember, elections really do have consequences. Well, my first guest is a rock and roll legend. He was the pianist for the Allman Brothers Band. He's played with every artist imaginable. I'm talking Eric Clapton, George Harrison, John Mayer, Miranda Lambert. Since 1986, he's been the touring musical director for the Rolling Stones, earning him the title of the sixth Rolling Stone. But the title he's proudest of is the Tree Man. That's right, he was named Tree Farmer of the Year for his conservation work on his Georgia pine tree plantation. I want you to welcome my friend and the coolest tree farmer in all the world. Please give a big welcome to Chuck Lavelle. Chuck, great to have you here, my friend.
Thank you, Governor. It's been a minute.
It has, and it's too long a time that we've had a chance to visit. But, you know, I find your career just one of the most remarkable ones in all of entertainment. You played on recordings at the ripe old age of 15 in the Muscle Shoals studio, one of the most remarkable places where some of the greatest hits have ever been recorded. 15. I mean, right. How do you even get a gig like that?
Wasn't easy. you know, I used to hang out outside the studio door. It was a very small studio, Muscle Shoals Sound. Not a lot of room for hanging out inside. But I had a connection, a gentleman I knew that was an engineer and producer there. And I would just hang out, wait for that door to open, hope that I could get invited in, meet somebody. Maybe sneak over to the piano and play a little bit and see if I could get some attention. And I used to do these demos. I think we got paid $25 a day to to do like, you know, about 5 or 6 demos for people. But I played on one recording session for a guy named Freddie North. He was a great R&B artist. And the song was called Don't Take Her, She's All I've Got, that Johnny Paycheck made a hit later on a country version.
Yeah,
but this was a rhythm and blues version. And lo and behold, it was a hit, you know. And of course, my name wasn't on the record, but I could hear it on the radio, and I knew I was in those little grooves, you know.
When did you start with the Allman Brothers? How did that happen?
That was in 72. I had moved to Macon, Georgia, where Capricorn Records was established. And sort of made my way up the ladder. I went there in 69 the first time and then moved in earnest in 70. And that's where I met my wife, Rose Lane. Rose Lane was working in the record company. So when the doors of the offices opened, you saw this gorgeous woman sitting behind a desk there, which was a very good sign for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that was over 50 years ago. Well, we actually got married a couple of years after that, 73. So we just celebrated our 50th anniversary.
Congratulations. Good for you.
Love you, Rosie.
And then you ended up, I mean, you've played with everybody and recording and on stage. But the Rolling Stones gig, I mean, let's face it, there's not another band like the Stones. They've been at it for 60 years and still going. You know, I tell people when they say Joe Biden is too old, I said, it's not his age. Mick Jagger's the same age as Joe Biden, and Mick's prancing all over the stage and still doing shows, you know, so that's not it. But how did you end up getting that gig with the Stones?
Well, I think the story of the career has been one thing leads to another. So I was with the Allman Brothers, as you know, and as you noted, for a few years. And Bill Graham, who was known as the impresario of rock. Bill was a wonderful promoter and just loved rock and roll music and promoted many, many bands. He had the Fillmore East and the Fillmore West. The East was in New York. The West was in San Francisco. Very famous clubs that so many early rock and roll artists played. And he loved the Allman Brothers Band. I think it was one of his favorite bands. When I came in, I think he thought, well, what in the world is a piano player doing in a guitar-based band? But I won him over. And we became friends and remained friends for years. Well, fast forward, he became tour director for the Rolling Stones in 81. And they wanted to try some new blood. And so Bill remembered me and he suggested my name to the guys. Hey, you need to call this guy down in Georgia, in the backwoods of Georgia. And within, you know, 36 hours of the phone call, I was at an audition.
Wow. Keith Richards has said about you that the Stones wouldn't be the Stones without Chuck Lavelle. That's a pretty big deal to have Keith Richards say that.
Very kind of him to say that. And I think the reason he does, one of my predecessors, you know, the Stones have had a number of great piano players through the years playing on their records and live. But the band was actually started by a piano player named Ian Stewart. And Stu was still alive when I came into the band. We became very good friends. And I learned a lot from Stu. Stu was a fantastic boogie-woogie player. He had a wonderful left hand. You know, he could really get around that left hand and then circle with the right. And he taught me a lot of that style. And I think when he passed away, which was in 85, Keith kind of looked to me to take that role on, playing that style of music on certain songs that they did. I mean, and listen, can I bring this
sure,
up?
Sure, yeah.
I bet none of you would imagine that Governor Huckabee has a connection to the Rolling Stones and specifically to Keith Richards.
I do.
So just a quick background. The governor and I met in Little Rock when I was at a forestry conference. He was speaking, I was speaking. He sent me a note on his card. He said, hey, Chuck, I'm a bass player. Let's stay in touch. And we did. Fast forward, the Stones come to Little Rock to play a show. And I emailed you and I said, well, Governor, are you going to come see the show? And yes, I am. And I'd love to get backstage. Oh, that'd be great. So he comes backstage and we get to talking. And he said, you know, there's something that only I can do, that you have to understand he was still governor at the time. There's something that only I can do for Keith Richards. Really? Well, what is that? He said, do you remember there was an incident in Fordyce, Arkansas, many years ago when Keith was arrested? He said, I can give him a pardon.
Yep.
And so So I went to Keith's manager, a wonderful woman named Jane Rose, and I said, Jane, you know, I know this is kind of crazy, but the governor has offered a pardon to Keith. She said, well, let's go ask him. So we go knock on Keith's dressing room door, and Keith, listen, the governor of Arkansas would like to give you a pardon if you're up for it, for that Fort Ice, Arkansas thing. Keith said, why not?
And I did.
And you did. He did.
And I got to tell you, there was a reporter who saw that I was doing this and came in real, you know, like, couldn't believe I would do something like that, and said, so I guess you just did that because he's Keith Richards in the Rolling Stones and he's big famous celebrity. And I said, that's exactly why I did it. You better believe it is. And I said, if you could play guitar as well as he did, I'd give you one too. Oh, hey, we're going to have you stick around because there's a lot more I want to talk with Chuck Lavelle. A very different side of this phenomenal Renaissance man. His life is one of America's leading conservationists and tree farmers. Right now, Keith Bilbrey is going to tell us what we have coming up even later on in the show.
Well, the things you hear on this show. Still to come, author and columnist Tim Carney talks about his new book, Family Unfriendly. Then later, the mind-bending magic of Scott Green.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Go to MikeHuckabee.com and sign up for his free newsletter and follow at GovMikeHuckabee on X.
All right, welcome back. You know, I could talk all night to Chuck about music, and I would love to do it, but most people are not aware that Chuck Lavelle's role as the sixth Rolling Stone is just part of his amazing life. The other title is The Tree Man. And there was a documentary all about your life. How in the world, I mean, most people would never think that a rock and roll keyboard player with the Rolling Stones is one of the nation's foremost experts on tree farming, named Tree Farmer of the Year in the entire United States. Pretty big deal.
Governor, it's all my wife's fault.
It usually is.
It usually is. No, Rose Lane's family has been connected to the land for generations and is tending cattle, row cropping, other livestock, but also tending forest land. Hmm. And fast forward to 1981, she inherited some land from her grandmother, and it became our responsibility to carry on this heritage of stewardship that had rubbed off on me through the years, you know, having known the family, spending time out in the mm-hmm. woods with them and everything. And so I thought of all these options. Well, you know, Georgia's known for peaches. You got pecans, shrubbery. We thought, you know, cattle farming was going to be a lot of day-to-day. And one morning at the breakfast table, my brother-in-law said, you know, if you're not going to plant this 50-acre field down here as we usually do in a crop, you might consider planting trees. And sort of a light bulb went off in my head. I'd never really given it a lot of thought. But the first thing that hit me was, where does that thing that has given me so much joy and such a great career come from?
Yeah.
From the resource of wood, the piano. Yeah. So many other musical instruments come from that resource. And so it was almost a spiritual connection to say, wow, maybe by learning about forestry, And let's, you know, let's talk about some of the other things that trees mm-hmm. and forests do for it. You know, materials to make our homes, schools, churches, offices, materials to make books, magazines, newspapers, packaging products, all those boxes that come from Amazon that goes through our doors. You know, they sequester carbon. They're one of the best sequester of carbon that we can have. They're just, I think, our most important natural resource. So I became a student. I mean, eventually I enrolled in a correspondence course on forestry when I was touring with a band called the Fabulous Thunderbirds from
Yeah, we all know them. You bet.
Wonderful Texas band. And I was doing the homework in the back of the bus or in hotel rooms whenever we would have a hotel room. And it took a couple of years to get through it. And, you know, it's not like having a four-year college program in forestry. I wouldn't admit to that. But I learned a lot from that course. I learned a lot by talking to others. I learned a lot by going to seminars and reading and then getting out in the woods.
So, you know, I'm thinking about your Tree Farm of the Year. You really are one of the go-to people when it comes to tree farming and conservation. Personally, winning Grammys or Tree Farm of the Year, which has been the greatest thrill for you?
One of the greatest honors of my life was given an honorary ranger, forest ranger award, and I have the hat and everything.
I love Mokey Bear.
It's the coolest hat in the world, I tell you. But it was so funny because that occurred the same year that I did get a Grammy for the lifetime achievement of the Allman Brothers Band.
Yeah.
So both things are just intensely passionate. I am passionate about them. I'm passionate about the music. I'm passionate about ecology, forestry, the environment. And, you know, it's not just about the trees in the forest. It's about what's within, the flora and the fauna. And there's a wonderful quote by Ralph Waldo Emerson that I think is so beautiful, that in the woods we return to reason and faith. Hmm. So maybe if we had some of our political discourses out in a national forest, we'd figure some things out. How about that?
That's a great idea. And by the way, I want to say one of the greatest joys that I had in watching the documentary, The Tree Man, was how it depicted the phenomenal relationship that you and your lovely wife have enjoyed through the years, the closeness and just the exemplary marriage that you have, it's portrayed in the film. It's absolutely one of the most delightful documentaries that I have ever watched. And I hope if people haven't seen it, it's about time they do.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Governor. And it really is a love story. That's, to me, what the film is all about. And Rosie, as I mentioned earlier, 50 years now and counting. And she's my inspiration. She's my partner. And we're blessed. You know, we're blessed. We live out in the woods on the property that was once owned by her grandmother. And, you know, we sit on the back porch in the rocking chairs at the end of the day, maybe with a little toddy, and watch the birds come in. They call me the bird man of Bullard. Bullard is our little community. I've got more bird feeders. Bird man of Bullard. I got, you know, we see the finches and the little chickadees and the cardinals and everything come in, and it's just, we live a wonderful life. And it really helps me, you know, it's 180 degrees from rock and roll.
Yeah.
But it kind of helps keep this thing in the right way.
It's an amazing story, and you're an amazing person. And if you go to Huckabee.tv, you can find links to Chuck Lavelle's music and tour dates, which you can go see, but also information about his tree farming and conservation efforts. You'll also find a link how to stream the documentary, The Tree Man. It's available on Amazon in a lot of different ways. Do see it. Right now, Keith Bilbrey, well, he may be out of his tree, but he does know what's coming up on the show next, so climb up in that tree and see what you see, Keith.
Okay. Well, next, Tim Carney joins Mike at the desk to discuss the family crisis in America today. Then, get into the St. Patrick's Day spirit with some fantastic Irish cooking with Chef Judith McLaughlin right here on Huckabee.
Samaritan's Purse reaches far and wide to bring life-saving aid and supplies in the midst of disaster and war. And it's not just a physical aid that they bring, but a spiritual one. Samaritan's Purse wouldn't be able to do what they do without your generous giving. So I hope you'll join their mission today. Here's how you do it. Call Samaritan's Purse or scan the QR code that you see on your screen. It'll take you directly to their website. Thanks and God bless for being a part of helping others. My next guest is a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. He's a columnist at the Washington Examiner, and he's a highly acclaimed author. But most importantly, he's a husband and the father of six children. Please welcome a man who was glad to get away from the house for a few hours to come here. The author of a wonderful new book that I hope you will get called Family Unfriendly, How Our Culture Made Raising Kids Much Harder Than It Needs to Be. Please welcome Tim Carney. Tim, I loved the book, and it was a kind of an eye-opening revelation about the fact that we're going through a culture which is making it harder to raise children, all in the name of trying to be good parents.
No, and I'm glad that you used the word culture, because we look at the problems we have going on in society today. You've got anxiety for children. It's at record highs.
Yeah.
Parents are more stressed out. And the birth rate is at record lows, as you know. And a lot of people think it's just economics. But I'm also a reporter, and so I go around the country, and I see the problem is at the root of culture. You got parenting culture is just insane. You have expectations that instead of Little League, you're taking your kid to travel sports. Expectations that mom and dad have to helicopter little Connor everywhere he might go so he doesn't skin his knee. It's also dating and mating culture. 20-somethings aren't getting married anymore because the culture, the dating apps, has made that all dysfunctional. And finally, the values of our culture are family unfriendly. We don't value, we think that sort of family, community, that those are old-fashioned. Schools are teaching kids that America's a horrible, racist country and that humans are ruining the planet. All of these things add up to making it harder for parents to raise healthy, happy families.
And, you know, I'm looking back at my childhood, and of course, you know, now I've got seven grandchildren, but I remember we didn't think about stress and anxiety.
Nope.
and being suicidal. You know, we just knew we had to come in sometime at about dark 30.
If you want to have dinner, you better be home by dinner.
That's the way it worked. But our parents had no idea where we were all day. I mean, no idea whatsoever.
And our parents were happier, and the kids were happier.
We were a whole lot happier
for them
not knowing where we were all day. Absolutely.
And so I cite the social science research in there that says that the number one cause of childhood anxiety is the lack of independent play. So again, parents think they're doing what's right for their kids in helicoptering them, giving them tutoring, making sure that their hours are constantly filled, and it's hurting the kids. And again, I think it's making young adults less likely to become parents themselves.
Tim, one of the things that was intriguing about the book, it's not only the stress that the kids are feeling because they've got so many different activities that they've been enrolled in because their parents want them to be great at all of it, but the parents are stressed out because they're basically are running a full-time Uber service, getting their kids from one thing to the other, and then pressuring them to be outstanding in music and in sports and in academics. Nobody can do that.
And they turn a game like baseball or soccer into a job for the kids. Mm. Something that's supposed to be fun and build, you know, virtues of camaraderie, hard work, et cetera, instead becomes the kids attach their own value. Oh, I have to succeed at this. So I went around and I talked to parents all over the country, and I found that a lot of parents had to pull their kids out of this. So I called it the travel team trap. That you think, oh, if I love baseball, I should sign my kids up for the best baseball team. With the, you know, some former minor leaguer as a coach. And then next thing you know, every other weekend they're in Delaware or Michigan for a tournament. And it makes the kids actually think less of their own ability, and it makes their anxiety higher, and it ruins family culture. And that's always what I'm trying to get back to, that being a good parent isn't giving your kid absolutely everything. It's building and cultivating a family culture that's oriented towards things that matter more: virtues, faith, community.
You know, the book got started, and it really drug me in immediately on the whole experience you had. It was sort of an aha moment for Tim Carney, and it was at a T-ball game, your oldest son, and these kids were playing T-ball, and everybody in the whole family were there. The older kids were playing things. The adults were talking to each other. Nobody really cared whether the T-ball kids won or
exactly.
not.
Exactly.
But it was the experience of a community coming together without there being such structure that everybody was stressed over it. It was like a light went on when I was reading what you described, and I thought,
That's what's missing in America.
Exactly. I left this, they call the Friday night on the field. There was this back of a church property. I went to my own parish, and the priest was saying, what do these families need here that they're not already getting? I said, Father, we need a place to bring our children and ignore them. Ignore them while they run around outdoors and we hang out with other adults. And if you've ever presented an idea to somebody in your church or some other institution, you know you've accidentally just volunteered.
Yes.
To run that.
And you volunteered.
I ended up running you could call it the T-ball ministry. But again, the point was not T-ball. It was the barbecue. And I was actually mostly working on coaching the parents to be less helicoptery.
And stay away from the kids.
And stay away from the kids and let them have fun and realize that that's better for everybody. But again, our family culture is thrown off, I think, because our values are thrown off. That in a more secular world, we start to, having a kid, we postpone that decision, we agonize over it, we deliberate. And instead of it just being what it used to be, you grow up, you get married, you have kids. You can opt out if you want, but that's a natural thing to do. But now it's so chosen, so deliberate, so you have to do it right. But also, if you don't see a sort of deeper value in humans, in children, as being infinitely valuable, then you think, okay, they're only valuable if they succeed at life. Yeah. And then that's where this pressure comes from. That's where people peel away from actually just realizing, actually, babies are good. We should have more of them.
And kids will figure out a way to enjoy life.
Yes.
When they're not pressured to enjoy it by a prescription that an adult has given to them with some expectation that they have to excel at it. I tell you, every parent, every grandparent ought to get this book, and it would be eye-opening, I think, in terms of what have we done to our children? Why have we made them so stressed out? Doesn't have to be. And I love the subtitle, How Our Culture Made Raising Kids Much Harder Than It Needs to Be. It is available right now at bookstores everywhere. Or you can head to Huckabee.tv. We'll show you how to get it right there. Now, Keith, and I mean this literally, what's cooking?
Well, up next, Judith McLaughlin is in the kitchen with a perfect dish for St. Patrick's Day. And still to come, Chuck Lavelle performs. You don't want to miss it. TV and get your very own made in the USA Huckabee mugs, t-shirts, and more.
Well, having this lady on our show has become a St. Patrick's Day tradition. She leads tours of Ireland and Scotland. She's written two great Irish cookbooks, one called A Return to Ireland, and the other one, The Shamrock and Peach. Please give a warm Irish welcome back to our show, to Judith McLaughlin. Judith, welcome back.
Thank you so much. Wonderful to be here.
It wouldn't be St. Patty's Day without you being here.
Well, it's wonderful to see so many people in the audience wearing green and
yes.
So many shamrocks in the audience as well. And I have a few great stories to tell you about shamrocks as we move into the cooking segment.
Well, I want to see what we're going to have because I'm hungry and I'm anxious to see what we're tasting tonight.
Well, we are going to be making Irish boxty, which is Irish potato pancakes with some salmon, and we have a wonderful lemon butter sauce with that.
Sounds all good. We knew we were going to have potatoes in this somewhere with this Irish thing going on. All right, so what are we
going to
do?
So the first thing that we're going to do, I'm going to get you to help me, and I have a special spoon for you tonight. This is a shamrock spoon, just for you.
Thank you.
So you're going to stir with the shamrock spoon. Mm-hmm. And I have some potatoes. These are raw potatoes, and I have these in a cheesecloth. I'm just going to squeeze out the excess water, and you are going to mix everything together. I will talk about the ingredients, and then you can put everything together. Mm-hmm. Then the next thing that we're going to add to that is some cooked mashed potatoes that I have riced and cooked.
So we got raw potatoes and mashed potatoes that have been cooked.
Yes.
All right.
And then the next thing is some flour.
Okay.
And then I have a little bit of baking powder and salt that I'm just going to sieve. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to add our wet ingredients. So we have an egg, raw egg, and I have some buttermilk that is going to bind everything together.
Lovely. I like buttermilk. A lot of people don't, but I do. And it's great to cook with.
Now, there's a famous rhyme in Ireland that all the girls know. And the rhyme is, boxty in the griddle, boxty in the pan. If you can't make boxty, you won't get a man.
Well, I really don't want a man, but whatever. Melts your butter.
Well, I made this recipe for my husband 30 years ago.
Oh, and you ended up getting it.
And we're still married.
There you go. Yes, it
so
worked.
This recipe has worked very well.
All right.
So we have this wonderful pan, and I see it's already got the heat going here, which is a great sign. So I'm going to put a little bit of butter or oil, but this pan is rather hot, so I'm actually going to do oil.
Okay.
But I do love the flavor of butter, especially Irish butter. So we may add some butter as well once the pan gets going.
And I love cast iron cooking.
Yes.
Just the best.
It is amazing. So I have got a couple of spoons. So in fact, if you would bring, Governor, the bowl to me, and I will just actually put a little pat of this. And we're going to make these small little pancakes like this. And it's got that nice sizzle. And these are delicious. We're going to be serving this, as say, with the pan-seared salmon, but they're wonderful as an appetizer as well. And you can have them do tiny ones for heavier hors d'oeuvres, or you can make it into an entree and have it for a hearty weeknight dinner. So I'm going to just do a few of these, and they're going to cook for probably about three minutes each side. Okay. Sometimes I like to actually pan fry them and then finish them off in the oven as well, just because it has the raw potato and you want that to cook through.
Is that on a high heat?
Yeah, it should be a medium heat. So I'm going to switch that down a little bit lower than that.
Okay.
And meanwhile, I wanted to tell you a story about the shamrock.
Let's hear it.
I promised you the story.
Yep.
And this is one of the famous stories that everyone in Ireland knows that you learn from a little girl, that I learned from a little girl. So this story is when St. Patrick went to the High King of Ireland and climbed the Hill of Tara. And the High King said to him, I am a pagan, and I don't understand why your Christian God is three yet one. And St. Patrick looked down, and he picked up a shamrock that was growing among the grass, and he held it up to the king, and he said, look at this. This plant is one stem, but it has three different leaves. And it is three in one, one in three. And that is how he described the Trinity. Mm. And the chieftain believed it. The High King said, I believe that's true. And this is a legend that has come down from 431, 432 is when St. Patrick came to Ireland, and that is the famous story that we all know. So when you look at the shamrock, you remember that story, that wonderful story.
I never knew that there was a spiritual connection to the shamrock. How many of you understood that that was the origin of St. Patrick's Day? Only a few, the real smart ones out here, the scholars. Most of us went to school in places like Arkansas. We didn't learn stuff like that, you know? We learned how to make taters. Now that we, by golly, did.
So while these are cooking, I'm going to switch that down a little bit.
Okay.
We're going to move over and we're going to start to assemble this wonderful dish together, because I said this will take a few minutes and I don't want to serve you the raw potatoes. So these are a few that I made backstage for you just about recently. So they should be nice and warm.
So I should try get a
Well, pour. I'm going to finish the whole dish together. I'm going to get a little bit of the pan-seared salmon.
That looks wonderful.
And I'm just going to just put on top of that. Mm. And then I'm going to add some of this wonderful lemon butter sauce, which is very easy. The recipe is going to be on the Huckabee website. So you can click on that, and it's a wonderful herbs, garlic, lemon, Irish butter. It's really delicious.
Sounds delicious. Maybe and then my wife will make that for me.
And then I'm just going to top that with a few of these wonderful little greens, and then I have some pickled red onion, and then we'll garnish this on the side with a little bit of lemon.
See, you care so much about how it looks, and that's good.
Oh.
Me, how it tastes. It's all I care.
Well, hopefully it will look good and taste good.
Well, it looks great.
Oh.
Okay, so if you think Irish cuisine means corned beef and green beer, you need Judith McLaughlin's cookbooks, A Return to Ireland and The Shamrock and Peach. And if you go to Huckabee.tv, we'll show you links to her website. Not only can you get her cookbooks, you can also learn more about Ireland and even join one of her upcoming personal tours of Ireland and Scotland. Now, believe me, there's no better guide on earth to show you those wonderful places. While Keith is talking, he's going to maybe say some things about the show, but I'm going to help make this food disappear. He is going to tell us what's next.
And I'm sure I'll never get a bite of it. Aaron Gobraw, after the break, will reappear with the excellent magic of Scott Green. See what I mean when we return. You're watching Huckabee. Next week for Congressman Pat Fallon and the hilarious comedian Kayvon.
Hey, I don't know about you, but one of the things I love about doing this show is the phenomenal music that we get every week, courtesy of Trey Corley and the Music City Connection. Give them a big hand. Scott Green graduated law school, but became a magician. What a good waste of a law school life, right? Well, I guess because lawyers can only make money disappear. So Scott has written a best-selling magic book. He's appeared on Penn & Teller, Foolist. He's been on Steve Harvey, ESPN. He was actually the team magician for the Chicago Bulls. He has even been a contestant on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Well, I want to tell you something. Being on this show will not make him a millionaire. But I know that you will join me in giving a great welcome to Scott Green. Scott, welcome. Thanks for coming.
Are you allergic to eggs?
No, I am not.
You will come to realize that was your chance to get out of this, but you all heard he's not allergic to eggs.
I might be. I don't know. Let's see what we got.
Would you take a step right back here, please?
Okay.
And I'm going to have you mix up these eggs and just kind of shuffle them around.
Mm.
Like that. Go ahead and mix them up.
All right.
Now, most magicians believe it is amoral for a magician to put anyone in harm's way, even if they used to be the governor of Arkansas.
I agree with that. I do.
So, no actual danger tonight. We're going to simulate some danger. Do you feel good about how they're mixed?
I think I do.
Fair enough. Would you take a seat, please?
Okay.
We're going to simulate some danger, and to simulate danger, we'll need three items that actually are dangerous.
Okay.
First is a piece of glass.
That's dangerous.
Yeah.
Yes.
Please hold the dangerous piece of glass. Be careful.
Okay.
It's dangerous.
Okay.
The second thing we're going to need is a die. It just sounds dangerous.
Oh. Okay.
Die. And the third dangerous item is this garbage can.
Oh, that's usually not dangerous, but it could be.
Loaded up with germs. Put your hand on top of that glass. Give it a shake for me. And tell us what number is on top of the die.
Three.
Six numbers on the die. Same six numbers you assigned to these eggs when you mixed them a minute ago. I'll simply take the egg that you decided should be egg number three.
Okay.
I hold it right about here.
Uh-oh. Now we're talking danger here, people.
And I squeeze it until we hear this sound.
Oh, no.
Do you feel anything dripping on your head?
Not yet. Do you feel any different about your future?
That egg is hard boiled.
Oh, hard good. Boiled. I'm so happy to hear that.
Put your hand on top. Give it a shake.
Okay.
That was egg-citing. We got a three. Go ahead, give it another shake. Yeah. Oh, very lucky tonight, yes. Yahtzee.
Ah, here we go.
Two.
Two.
Yeah, you see, it seems dangerous until you realize all the eggs are hard-boiled.
We hope.
Except one of them.
Oh, yeah.
You survived. There we go. That was exhilarating.
Another
give it a shake.
Okay.
Give it a shake. Yeah, we need a 1, a 4, a 5, or a 6. That's okay. It's fine. You mix the eggs, and you're the one who's shaking the die. So if this goes wrong, who do you think gets blamed?
I don't know.
You always blame me. How is that fair?
I think it's you. You better be glad you're a lawyer.
It's okay. If the worst does happen, the raw egg is good for your scalp. It helps.
I'm sure it will help grow hair up there.
It'll at least prevent eczema.
Oh,
there we go. That is a hard boiled egg.
Thank goodness.
Put it on the shake. We need a 1 or a 4 or a 6.
And you say one of these is
one,
raw,
four,
huh?
Six.
Wish one, I knew
four,
which one.
Six.
Okay.
Keep giving it a shake. We already used number 2. It don't get exhausted. Just keep shaking. Keep 4. There we go.
Yep, 4.
Are you enjoying this egg experience?
No.
I just don't want you to have an existential crisis.
It is exciting. And that's no yolk.
This might be. No! We're good again. All right. Now, this time, I'll take back the glass and I'll take the die.
Okay.
Because we're going to accelerate the danger.
Uh-oh.
This time, simply grab an egg. Just take one. Take one.
Take one.
Hold it. Don't let me near it. Don't let me near it. Keep it safe. You are mother hen.
Okay.
All right. Started with 6 eggs, but the danger has increased exponentially.
It has indeed.
1, 2, 3. 4, 5. We started with 6 eggs, is what I'm trying to say.
Exactly.
We started with 6, but we're down to 2.
Exactly.
The risk is extreme. Here we go. Hard boiled.
Oh, good.
Hard boiled.
Hard boiled.
Which leaves only 2 possibilities, because either that egg, through luck or magic or something else, is the raw egg, or I am a dirty, rotten cheat, and that is a hard-boiled egg as well. I know of no better way to find out what is inside of an egg than for you to crack that egg into this glass and egg-stinguish any doubt.
It's a raw egg.
A raw egg!
It's a raw egg.
It is time to celebrate.
Yes. Wow. Hey. His career continues because he didn't break a raw egg on my head. If you want to see more of the excellent magic of Scott Green, or if you want to book him for your event or a virtual show on Zoom, visit Huckabee.tv. We will hook you up. Right now, Keith will tell us about some musical magic that is still ahead on the show.
Well, the show's not over yet. Musician Chuck Lavelle performs when we come back on Huckabee. Well, to find Chuck Lavelle's music and tour dates and to stream the documentary, The Tree Man, just go to Huckabee.tv. Now, performing the Allman Brothers classic Blue Sky with Trey Corley and the Music City Connection and Mike on bass, here's Chuck Lavelle!
Sunday morning bells are ringing everywhere. Going to Carolina, won't be long till I'll be there. Hey. You're so turn your love my way. Turn your love my way.